talks about socialist practices in Cuba, racism, patriarchy, and the way forward for socialist politics. Again, that's Asada Shakur Talks About Socialist Development in Cuba, Wednesday, March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 236 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 43 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to a song collaboration between Pink Martini and Saori Yuki. You can hear more at pinkmartini.com. Well, you guys, I sound a little bit different because I'm getting over a cold, but I'm so excited about my next guest. She's a fan favorite theater artist, Lauren Weedman, who is back in Portland. She's wowed audiences in the past two shows at Portland Center Stage, and now she's in town to do a reading tonight at 7:30 p.m. tonight at Powell City of Books, featuring her new book, Misfortune. We'll be talking to Lauren Weedman live in the studio, so stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Misfortune. The whole title is Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay. And it's a collection of funny and quite often poignant personal essays by Lauren Weedman. And with me in the studio live is actress and author Lauren Weedman, who's in town to do a reading tonight at Powell's. Welcome to Stage and Studio, Lauren. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. It is very good to be here.
And welcome back to Portland.
Oh, yeah.
And first time I've gotten to talk to you. I talked to you on the phone once.
Is that right? I know your name sounded super familiar.
Yeah, I called you. I think you were in Utah or someplace.
What was I doing
remote
there, for God's sake?
I don't know. I think it was a residency or something.
Possibly.
Anyway,
that
my memory
good.
Goes, you know. But you've received some fantastic reviews and articles on your book so far. I mean, fantastic. By all accounts, it's a pretty big deal.
Well,
it really is.
Gosh, I guess so. You never know. I mean, it's always such a false beginning. It can be like, oh God, it's happening, and nope, it's
and
over.
Then there's one, and you go, you fixate on that. But that's
exactly
the way I am.
Yeah, no.
But,
so far, I've been surprised, to be honest. they've been as good as, you know, they have been, but they have been really.
It's been very positive, and you know, it's been a successful response. And I'm glad it feels good for you.
I mean, it feels good to get good reviews.
Yeah, of course
Dear
it does.
Lord, yes, it does.
A lot of coverage, though, I have to say. I have a bone to pick because they had spoilers about the last chapter in your book, and I was not pleased because I hadn't gotten there yet. So we won't talk about that.
Oh, and I have issues with that, too.
Because
I like
honestly,
I
hadn't got to that very – I was like on the very last chapter. So you guys, don't read too much. Just read, you know, about her on stageandstudio.org, okay? And so anyway, you know, you've had great national coverage, and it can only help your career. So I'm really happy for you. What's been the response from readers?
I don't know
book.
Yet.
Just start. Is this your launch of your book tour?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. It started on the 15th. And I don't know. I haven't really heard because even my friends are still sort of
Going
their
through
way
it?
Through it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of my friends don't even, you know, read the book. They're like, yeah, Lauren, I sat next to you at that dinner. I know what happened. Like, I don't need to read it.
I would think they'd be curious.
Yeah. If they're being mentioned or not, probably.
That's right.
Trying to get
That's
their lawsuits
right.
ready. So I don't know. And I thought about going on Goodreads, you know, that website. Mm-hmm. Then I get worried if it's, you know.
Well, you don't want any, you know, the negative.
Yeah, not
stuff.
Not just yet. I got enough of that. Yeah. I carry around that, you know, all
we
those messages
enough
in my
of
head.
That as women, period, time. Yeah.
So I'd like a little, I'm just going to try to ease into it, and I'm sure I'll have some night of, you know, dark night of the soul of self-hatred that usually hits me at some point.
Yeah, just tell your friends to just tell you, hey, it's great.
Yeah, okay? Lie to me. Lie.
Well, actually, I have. I'm not lying to you. I have read through And it, you know, you're actually, you Google you, and it's like all about how wonderful your book is. So just trust that.
Good.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. My guest is author and actress Lauren Weidman. We're talking about her second book, just released, Miss Fortune. It is your second book, right?
Yeah, it is.
Second memoir, yeah. Miss Fortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay. And she'll be reading her book tonight at 7:30 at Powell City Books. And that's located at 1005, if you don't know
about
it. Everybody
people
knows
not know,
it.
They're like,
well, I know, it's downtown. Yeah. 1005 West Burnside in Portland. For more info, go to powells.com or stageandstudio.org. Miss Fortune is a comedic memoir, especially in the way you describe people and situations. But like all good comedy, it's also based in painful memories. I mean, it really is. I mean, that's good comedy, right? There's some brutal, brutal honesty, you know, in your writing. And, you know, it isn't a light read. I mean, for me,
right.
You know, because I really, you know, I felt for you. I really, you have a really good way of putting people in that scene, and that's the best of memoir. How many years did it take you to write this? Or how many years does it span? It spans a great many years.
Yeah,
actually.
It does. It goes it goes way
like
back.
5 years. Oh, actually, you go back to childhood and high school.
Yeah, so it's not a. And it's funny. Yeah. They refer to it as a memoir, and the first one too. I didn't approach it as a memoir. I just think of them as short stories, like
personal
comedic
essays. Yeah.
But because I will lie and I will flip things around.
Of course.
If it, you know, protects
literary
somebody.
Literary license.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or makes it funnier. You know, mm-hmm. I'm cheap like that. I'll do whatever I can to, you know, make it funnier in some places. But it took me much longer than was intended. And I'd heard writers talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, like,
does.
I've been working on this novel for 74 years. And you're like, well, that seems kind of long.
That does seem long.
Well, 74 is maybe a tad exaggerated. But this one, I was supposed to have it done in like a year and a half. And it took me about 3.5 years, but double the time, because of things that were going on as I was writing it. And I started to write right after I had my kid. And as much as I wanted to believe that that would change nothing, just like many of my male friends, when they're like, you know, she said nothing would change after the baby. Everything's so different. You know, like, yeah, duh.
Well, life changes.
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah, so it did shift a bit. So it took me a while to be able to get deep enough with it. You know, I sort of floated on the top a lot.
You know, you've been working on your stage shows, which are also are personal observations and personal memories and stories. And, you know, I can attest to it because I've just completed my own memoir, which actually is a collection of essays.
Oh.
And it took about, you know, it's a 10 years worth of collection, but, you know, you probably worked on it heavily the last year or so. That's the way I was.
Yeah, well, I don't write on it. Congratulations, by the way. I think writing is
congratulations
super
brutal. To you.
It's hard.
It's horrible.
I find
it's
really
excruciating,
hard.
Especially the editing process and the copy editing, I think. But,
Oh, geez, I'm such a dumb with that kind of stuff. Like, if I send it away to, you know, people to help me with editing, they're always like, Lauren, just try to stay in the same tense in the same sentence. How about that?
I know.
Like, oh my gosh.
I know. It's like, what do you want?
I know. Who am I? I'm supposed to be some educated person or something? My God. I didn't write it as it was happening. You know, I wasn't, this is all looking back. Well, that's not true. Some things I wrote about as they were happening, but then when I went back to look at the book, I didn't actually know what the real story was. Like, for instance, I was writing about after my son was born and that time period, and I thought that reality, I don't want to spoil the end, I thought one reality was happening, and I did not know the true reality of my life at that point. So that's what took me longer with the books. I had to go back and actually rewrite these stories so they were what was actually happening, if that makes any sense.
Well, it makes total sense to me. I think it's like you need reflection after you've written, especially after you've written the first draft, I think, you know, to really see what it is that you're writing about.
But sometimes you don't even know what you were writing about. You know, like you can think, oh, it's about the birth of my child, but maybe it was about the end of my marriage, or maybe it was about us moving, or do you know what I mean? It's never, like, I put end of the marriage or moving, like those are two things that are similar, right?
Major life changes.
That's true, but it just, you're right.
I found so many chapters especially touching, and I have to say, you know, I'm glad you brought up your marriage, because my favorite chapter was, I think there's two favorite chapters. My favorite chapters are the very first one, where you, the insecurity of not knowing or knowing whether or not, the person that you are, your partner, is really committed to you.
Right.
And I'm not going to spoil it, but then you find out. But, you know, it was just so touching to me, because I can relate, and I think most people can relate to that insecurity of a relationship when you're not quite sure if that person is committed to you, and then you find out.
Right.
And
I'm always finding out they're not.
And you're pleasantly surprised, and then later on you're not pleasantly surprised. You know, I mean, the second chapter, you know, when you talk about the end of your marriage. I mean, not the second, but the second chapter that I loved especially was about the end of the marriage. And, you know, those two.
Yeah, beginnings and ends.
It's almost like,
those are the good stuff to read about.
Those are the
middle's
great
boring,
stuff.
But yeah.
No, the rest of it's great too. But yeah, I really related to that, you know. And I know that the details that you use put the reader right in the scene, and they just reminded me of what, you know, that's what makes good memoir. It really does, even if you're not calling it a memoir.
Yeah, and I'm not against the memoir thing. Yeah. I'm like, whatever, what section is near to the cash register? I want to be in that section.
Okay. Well, you want like people to read your book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I know you've done a lot of personal storytelling. How much did you have to push yourself to really reveal what you did?
People keep asking me this.
I'm sorry.
I'm not attacking you. I'm like, and I can't tell you how mad that makes me.
Just kidding.
And the last person who asked that, well, they won't be asking it again.
Well, I'm not going to answer that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Burned him with my cigarettes once. No, only that when it's asked, I realize that I'm like, well, it seems people are like, you really reveal all this stuff. I'm like, well, that's always what I've done because that's where my material has always been. And I think I love to hear people's truths. I love people's secrets. I love the messiness of humanity. And those are the books I love to read, the music I like to listen to. It's always the more sort of just, you know, truth and, you know, Lucinda Williams playing music, kind of that kind of just raw, gritty stuff I enjoy.
Well, is life about if it's not good material?
Yeah, well,
right?
Yeah, but I think people also are like, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's part of it.
It also helps when you're going through something when you're like, well,
this
will be amazing. Like, yeah, I'm like, finally, I have my last chapter of the book. Thank you, ex-husband.
Oh.
So it's, I mean, the only thing that I never think of it as being brave or is it hard to do. To me, what's hard to do is to be super honest about the more serious emotions of it. Like, I can tell you every little secret, but to me, to get down to who I really love or what my heart is really about, getting a little bit deeper than the jokes is what, sometimes that's hard.
And it's hard, I think, to really, really be honest about yourself.
Well, because you don't know. For me, I think
it's
hard
to even know.
Listen, and everyone else is like, you're a liar, Lauren. That's not who you are at all.
No, you're just not aware half the time, right?
No.
You're reacting to things, and then I suppose I know in your acknowledgement you said your editor really pulled that out of you.
She did, because she kept asking me, for somebody who is always so like self-absorbed about my emotions and talking about my feelings and such, it is funny who I'll be like, you know, I think I have gas or something, or I think I'm tired. And I'm like, no, actually, I think you're just sad about what I'm like, oh, that's what sadness is?
Right.
Like, so sometimes I'm still distancing myself, as we all do, just in the overwhelm of how feelings can get so intense. Can be too much.
It's hard to have that perspective.
Yes.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm talking with actress and author Lauren Weedman, and we're talking about her second book, Misfortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay. And she's doing a reading at Powell's tonight, the Powell's downtown, 7:30 p.m. And another chapter that was beautiful was your discovery, getting to know your birth mom. I mean,
yes.
The discovery of her, but also getting to know her. It wasn't that after school special where everybody's tears and hugs and crying, you know, but it was something to me a lot more real. Mm. And it took time, didn't it?
Yes.
What is your relationship with them now, with your birth family? I mean, you got to know the entire...
Yeah, no, I'm close to them. They're all just a part of my... I just have, you know, I have four... Well, three. I have a lot of families. I have my birth mother and her kids.
And your family.
And my family. Yeah. And then the adopted family I was brought up in, my family. And then my birth father is not with my birth mother, but I'm, you know, I know him and his kids and his wife. And so I have all these different, they all are in Indiana. So when I go back to Indiana, I just spend 4 minutes with one, 4.5 minutes with the other, 3 with the one who's bugging me, and then I get out of town. No, I mean, but I just have to do a lot of, they've all been really open to having relationships, and I've been a part of their lives since I met them, since I was 19.
Well, do you have a section that you can read about
thank you,
that?
Dume, for asking. I happen to have a small section.
I would love to hear it, and I'm sure our listeners would,
and thank
too.
You for being so kind about, I mean, I know that, you know, people can, when someone's sitting right in front of you, you don't want to be like, I have real issues with your, you know, writing, and take a workshop, for God's sakes, lady. I know that.
I hope they haven't said that.
I know, exactly. You're too kind to even think people would do that, but just you being so nice about it. I was just thinking how, after
do you
all
want to set that up for us a little bit?
I wrote this book. How about that?
I'm just kidding. Sounds great to me.
No, this is a chapter about my, I've just had my own son, and, It's 2 years after Leo, my son, was born, and I'm visiting my birth mother in Indiana, and hopefully it's self-explanatory. We'll see. All the things that I'd loved about my birth mother suddenly seem suspect. For instance, over the years, I've watched Diane, my birth mother, chat up people who most of society would run from. You could wheel up a headless torso on a gurney, and Diane would chat away with it like they were old school buddies. Adults with severe cerebral palsy who can communicate only by blinking can chat for hours with Diane simply because she isn't scared of humanity in all its forms. I've always loved this about her, but it leaves me with she loves everybody, insecurity. In fact, if she were due for a coffee and a baked good, she might not have been able to determine who was standing in front of her at all, much less cared. We were making plans for my upcoming visit over the phone, and I tried to share this fear with her. Her response was, what, are you adopted or something? That was it. People talk about genetics versus nurturing, but within 6 weeks of being Leo's mother, I realized that what makes a mother is being there. The hours alone with him in the middle of the night, feeding him, loving him, feeling that old you and me against the world, hell and ready bond. The hell of knowing I will worry about his safety for the rest of his life. That is a mother. All these years, I've had an ongoing, it's a hard knock life in the orphanage shtick about how my mother didn't get me, my adopted mother. How Sharon, my adopted mother, didn't understand who I really was. I can't laugh without her screaming seizure at me, I would say, and she shoves a stick in my mouth right after. I tell my friends that the picnic table in our backyard was the adopted table, where my family had requested I take all my meals. Should I stop there?
I think that's wonderful.
Good
Yeah. I mean, it really goes into a great deal of detail about just that insecurity and awkwardness that I think I haven't heard a lot of people write about when they're talking about their meeting their birth family.
It's complicated.
It's so complicated.
It helps too that I'm close to them, so that I could write about this. This is the one time period with Diane where things were not it's always been great with her, but it was a weird time period where I suddenly was mad at her and out of nowhere, which had never happened. Seems kind of natural at some point. You'd be like, hey, wait a minute. Why'd you leave me in the trash can? But she read this. Like because I think I'm closer, I can be more honest. You know what I mean? So when I showed her the chapter and she gave me her blessing, that helped me give me the freedom to really just go for it and mock her to no end.
Has she read it?
Yes. Yes. I show everybody.
Okay. And they know.
Yes. I always get the okay.
Did you have to change anything?
No, I changed one thing about her current husband. Because I made him sound more like a racist than I meant to. And so I lightened up the racism. Because he's not really a racist. He's just a bit sort of naive about how he words things. Mm-hmm. Southern Indiana, what are you going to do?
So they're more ignorant about certain things.
A little more ignorant, let's say, sure.
Yeah.
And so I tried to be lighter on that because it wasn't so necessary, for the story. Because I really don't want to... My point is never to hurt anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, what's the point of that, right?
Well, some people enjoy that quite a lot, actually.
I guess. Well, I do have to give a warning to readers, that some of your writing is kind of potty humor.
Is it a church? This isn't like...
No. Okay. But I'm just saying, in case people think it's a family memoir. It's not a family memoir.
I think by the sound of my voice, you can tell that we're not going into sunny, even my voice sounds like trouble, I think, right now.
Well, I don't know about that. But if for people, I don't think most people who are KBOO listeners would be shocked. But it's adult.
It's gritty, yeah.
It's adult. Yeah. Sometimes, to me, though, you're kind of shocked by your own reactions to things, more than what other people are doing. The whole episode, you have a whole episode about a chapter about your tattoo, and not being able to tell the people that are the tattoo artists, you really don't want the tattoo. You don't think they're good. You don't really want them and you end up with something that you didn't really want.
Yeah, because I don't know if you can relate at all to the people pleaser aspect of life
exactly,
for a lady. But
right.
I basically was getting a tattoo that was supposed to mean trust your instinct and always remind myself, because I felt like I got the lesson. I'm like, I really get it. This thing happened where I felt I had a breakthrough. And then when I go to get the tattoo, the tattoo artist walks out and she's shaking, like when she reaches out to shake my hand.
There's a lot of red flags.
And as soon as I saw that, oh, there's tons. Yeah. And every single time I was like, I should turn around and walk out, but I didn't want to hurt anyone's feeling.
And I can relate to that.
Well, that's
too.
It's so over the top, isn't it? It's like right to the point where I'm like, okay, there's blood oozing out of the walls. Maybe I should go. You know, there's like Satan's voice going, get out. And I'm still like, well, you know, I did make an appointment. I don't want them to think I'm leaving, you know, because I'm judging them. Like, and then I end up getting, I still have the tattoo, which.
Oh, can I see it?
Yeah. When people say get it covered up, I'm like, but it really does mean trust your instinct because it's such an awful.
It's not as bad as I thought it would be from your description.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think I got to play it up a bit. You see, I'm already.
But I understand.
But it wasn't
what you wanted. And so it's a reminder. Is it a reminder to you to trust your instinct from now on?
Yeah. Well,
because of this.
Sure.
On
that's
my
what,
wrist.
That, right, when people say get it covered up, I'm like, but it became, it actually. Became trust your instinct. It became the best symbol of trust your instinct ever. But it hasn't helped. I'm sorry to say, Demi. I still, when I look down, I think trust your instinct, and I'll still have a second milkshake. I mean that sort of metaphorically, then literally.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard because you never know if your instinct is correct or if you're just if you're just neurotic about something.
Yeah,
you know?
I know what's instinct and what's.
Well, I think they're probably the
again,
same.
Guess.
But you know, right. Well, from the stage work that you've written about so honestly, you know, people would describe you as fearless. Do you describe yourself as fearless?
Well. I'm scared right now. Is that weird? I'm just kidding. I'm not. Don't worry. You know, I'm not fearless. When it comes to exposing myself or talking about life's, you know, just life, I'm not scared about that. I am scared about hurting other people. That's my biggest fear.
Okay.
So when things come out, like the New York Post did an awful thing. Or they, you know, they told me they weren't going to, you know, print certain things.
Oh, they did the spoiler thing, didn't
they?
Yeah,
and then
they
sensationalized
bad.
It and stuff.
Yeah,
and then to think I was hurting, as much as I'm not, you know, listen, I certainly have my issues with my ex-husband, of course, but he's the father of my child, and I'd never wanted to, it's weird, because people are like, give it to him, what do you care? And I'm like, I do care, actually. I want somebody else to, let life give it to him. You know, like, I'm done. Like,
yeah,
let his own karma play it out. I don't want to be the bad guy. So I'm a little wimpy about that. So that's where my
fear
comes in.
Yeah, I agree with you on the New York Post. That was pretty, I think it was in bad taste that they did that.
Oh, I was, yeah that was more fun.
Well, Portland Center Stage, let's forget about them. Portland Center Stage just announced its next season, and you're featured in the spring 2017 slot with a show called Lauren Weedman Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And you've done two shows before, Bust and the People's Republic of Portland. I was going to play a clip, but we actually don't have time for that. I'd rather talk to Lauren. I'm talking to Janet, my engineer. You know,
I thought you were talking to the voices.
In my head,
it actually
too.
Is,
yeah,
it?
I'm saying, I don't want to do that anymore. Yeah. But can you give us any, you know, spoilers or teasers, let's say, about what you're going to be doing in Lauren Weedman Doesn't Live Here Anymore?
Well, right now, my first draft is just me sitting on stage for about 75 minutes, just looking back, staring at the audience. Mouthing, I'm sorry.
Because you haven't written it yet?
Exactly,
okay.
No. No, it's going to be, I've been working on it actually. It's a, and I'll be here for JawFest over the summer doing a workshop.
And you're developing it there.
Yes, and it's a germ, is that what you say? It's seed, it's germ?
Germinating.
It's germinating, right.
Marinating.
Yeah, listen, the book is, you
it's
can.
It's seeding.
Yeah, the germ of the idea, that's what I wanted to say. There, oh, geez. Was that, was doing cabaret shows. I've been doing traveling around doing music and performing live music and telling stories and getting into the whole cabaret live performance, sort of variety show kind of vibe. And so I'm going to do that. This is going to be a big musical extravaganza, one person extravaganza.
You're going to sing for us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
With the band and everything. It's going to
I think I've read about that you've been singing a lot more lately.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and that's exciting. You know, even though you make comedy, you do comedy. You make observations about other people, about yourself, and you reveal so much. There's not a mean-spiritedness about what you do that I really appreciate. I mean, you come from a good place.
That's, I try to.
Comedy is mean-spirited.
Yeah, well, and it makes me laugh. Here's the other awful thing is that I will laugh, and somebody else can do it, though. They can be the, I'm just too wimpy about it. Because I want to make sure, my whole thing with work is that I do like the sort of revelation aspect of trying to figure out what's happening and what is the story. And I like the bigger picture, not just about the laugh, as much as I'm always trying to find the story. More than just the ba-dum-bum, you know, because I'm not a stand-up so much.
Yeah, you're not a jokey person.
No.
You're descriptive in your comedy.
Yes, and it's usually more just towards myself.
And emotional, too.
Yeah. Very emotional, too.
Very emotional.
Thanks for mentioning
it. You have feelings.
Sometimes.
Well, you have, so your PCS show, you'll be developing this summer.
Yes.
And then we'll see it next spring. And
yes, it's going to be on the main stage.
It's going to meet. Oh, listen, big stage.
Hey, for me, because I'm a second stage, you know, I'm the alternative box that people check when they're like, you know, getting their subscriptions. And they're like, God, what are we going to see now?
You. They have a lot of faith in you, Portland Center Stage does, which they should. You're on the book tour now, but, you know, so we know what you're doing this summer. What's next for you beyond the stage show?
Well, I'm shooting some independent film stuff.
Good. Because I read that you were auditioning, because your show, I'm sad to say, HBO show Looking was not renewed.
I know. Is that just the...
And that's just HBO being bad. But, yeah. You know, but you're auditioning for other things, too.
Yeah, which is, you know, I'm... the Looking movie is going to be airing over the summer. And then I did a movie with Woody Harrelson called Wilson. And that's going to be coming up. But that's all done stuff. And then I'm shooting... I mean, mostly I'm working on the Portland Center Stage show. I'm going to perform on a few gay cruises. Kind of a dream come true, I have to say.
You do have a lot of chapters about your gay friends and your gay high school teacher, which I also found moving.
Oh, good. Well, he died, so thank God you felt moved.
Yeah,
otherwise,
but
you'd be some
moving
kind of...
in the sense that he had an impact on you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know? Oh, believe me, I'm right in the middle of... I always describe like my life with like the gay boys. They're just a big... It's like getting into a warm bath to me. I love being around, just relaxing all my gay friends. I'm deeply in that community. But what am I doing coming up? I'm probably going to ride on a stationary bike a little bit and read.
Relax
and
a little bit.
Nap.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to be critical here, okay?
I'm going to
say something here.
Oh, God, you turned a corner.
I did turn a corner because we're running out of time. Yeah, last 1 minute, you know. Mm-hmm. But I know your memoirs from your perspective and your observation, but I've been thinking a lot about the lack of visibility for people of color in Hollywood. And a lot of times the people that you meet are people that you work with. And I was a little surprised there were no significant people of color in your book.
Oh, my God, that is so interesting.
I'm probably the only one that's going to mention that to you, I would think.
But I like that. No, it comes up.
It does.
Comes up. I mean, not about the book, but just life in general. Because I'm always like, when I walk into a room in LA, I'm like, oh gosh, look at all the white people.
But that's Hollywood, isn't it? Is that from your perspective and who you meet?
See, I never think about... The color thing is not my... I will notice it, but I'm always bugged by the guy thing. So we all have our... men.
Right.
Could we find a white guy? Is there a white guy in his 30s around? Could you... You know, just that kind of thing really bothers me.
Because there's so many.
Well, there are some people of color in the book, but I don't mention enough that they are like my friends or that... You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't say...
They're not close to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like people of color to be friends with me. I get really freaked out.
Well, maybe that could be the topic of your one topic of your next show.
Because
I don't know if you know Margaret Cho, but I'd like to
I know her.
It seems like you two should be really
good
friends.
Yeah, I know. I should say that too. I should start the book by going,
I know Margaret
Cho. Just
so
you know, I know Margaret Cho, and I've dated a lot of black guys, and I know that doesn't count. And, you know, and then I'll get into my other, I have a Polynesian friend.
Okay, the Tahitian friend too in the book, or your first tattoo artist, right?
Yeah, there's people that are of, but I don't think to do it. Do you know what I mean? I don't think to point things out. You know, you always put your own struggle is.
Yeah.
You know, and mine again is more about the females.
Women.
That's been my struggle.
Yeah.
But I love anybody telling me. I like good conversations. Put it this way.
I appreciate
a good sort
you,
of like,
you
I'm like,
taking
bring it
this
on.
Too. Well, you know, one final note because we only have 1 minute left. You write a lot about weight issues, and I have to tell you. Boo, boo, boo on that because you are gorgeous.
This is what's happening.
Yes, this is what's happening.
Like
I turned
date?
Another corner.
Oh, okay.
I turned another corner. No, because I, you know, I look back on high school photos and I go, what was I thinking about? You know, I was maybe 10 pounds overweight.
No,
then,
but I was,
you know?
I was far, I was, I mean, I was like 60 pounds heavier than I am
now.
You
did really great.
Thank you.
You
thanks.
Did. That's an achievement, keeping it off. Let me tell you, it's not losing it, it's keeping it off.
I'm hungry right now. And if that
don't
helps.
Eat. No,
yeah, like you
kidding.
Go from like
I'm
PC,
kidding.
You're like,
I'm
they're
kidding.
Not people of color. And you're like, starve yourself.
I know.
I'm like, this is a mixed message here at KBOO.
I'm just kidding because I just want to tell you that because I'm sure you've heard it before. But congratulations.
Thank you so much.
On your memoir.
Thank
That's
you.
A big achievement.
Thank you.
And your honesty is refreshing and your attention to detail. Really, you are a great writer.
Thank you for
saying
that.
So I hope you are getting the kudos that you deserve.
Well, I am right now.
Well, good.
That's good.
Author Lauren Weedman doing a reading of her new book, Come Tonight, Misfortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay, 7:30 p.m. March, that's today, at Powell's downtown in Portland. And if you missed any of this interview, you can hear it again at stageandstudio.org. Lauren Weedman, a joy to talk with you today.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
And before we go, shout out for Theater Diaspora's reading at Portland Center Stage, March 26th, that's this Saturday, 2 p.m., for The Language Archive by Julia Cho. Come support Portland's only and first Asian American theater company. And you can find out more at theaterdiaspora.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Thanks. And Janet Anderson, my engineer. Oh, she already cut me off. Okay.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tim DeChristopher Lecture, Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Tim DeChristopher, as bitter 70, disrupted a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas auction in 2008 by outbidding oil companies for land parcels around Arches and Canyonlands National Parks in Utah. His actions led to a 21-month imprisonment. Again, that's a lecture by Tim DeChristopher titled Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.